You were never going to let us die. You planned to come back.
You were supposed to ask me,
he snarled, then collected himself and was again the imperious mighty war. I did. I'm here, I said quickly. Our peace was fragile. One wrong move, and it would be broken. I could feel anger rolling off him in thick, suffocating waves. I could feel his sorrow, his despair, the fragility of his commitment to die our champion. But it was there. He cupped my jaw, tipped my face up, and stared down at me. Neither of us is getting what we want, Cruz, I said quietly. You know I have no desire to lead the Fey race. I'll hate this. But I'll be a good queen, I promise. Until I found some other Fey I believed could handle it. And if he really gave me the song, it might be a small eternity before I found a Fey I felt I could trust to wisely use such enormous power.
Better a bad day in hell than no days at all,
he said bitterly. I agreed with him on that score. What must I do to persuade you to give me the other half of the song?
Be less impatient for it. These are my final hours. What would you want in yours?
Wariness flickered in my eyes. He shook his head and gave me a chiding look.
Harming you was never my desire, Michaela. I wanted you at my side while I ruled my people. I would have led them well.
I agreed that he would have made a fine leader, and told him so.
The bargain price for half a song is a kiss. One kiss that convinces me utterly that, were circumstances different, you would have chosen me. A single kiss that evokes the finest within me. That and your word that you will not wield the song for 4 human hours from the moment we part.
Why?
Shh.
He placed a finger to my lips.
Because I said so. Is that not what your barons used to say to you so often? Cede me the same respect. What did you say to him that day? Because I asked you to, Jericho, that's why. Trust me, Michaela.
I exhaled deeply. Then I slid my hands around his neck and leaned in. As my eyes began to close, he said,
Eyes open. I am not your barons, and will never be. Nor would I wish to. I am Cruz of the Tuatha De Dananna, High Prince of the Court of Shadows, and you are Michaela Lane O'Connor, Queen of the Court of Light. Convince me on another day you would have chosen me as your consort.
I convinced him. I'd kissed him many times before, taking his true name into my tongue. I saw things so clearly now. Good and evil didn't exist. There was only power and choice. Power went where you willed it, wrong or right, dark or light. And before he vanished, he passed me the other half of the song of making, as he'd said he would, leaving his final words lingering in the air.
Tell the world the legend of Prince Cruz of the Court of Shadows. Omit the kiss, and paint me majestic. Lead my people well, Michaela.
He'd given us back the world, the universe. I vowed that I would. 58. I can't keep it in. I've gotta let it out. Mac. For the next 3 hours, I sat in Baron's books and baubles, teeth clenched, doing everything in my power to simply hold in the song. It didn't want to stay in. The moment Cruz passed it to me, the second half instantly inverted, and joined with the first, as if completion was the only way they could coexist within me, eradicating any concerns I might have had about how to flip and join them. Also eradicating my concerns about how to wield it. It wanted to be sung. It sensed the distress of the world and sought to repair it. Right now, this very instant. And if I dared open my mouth, it would come gushing out. But I'd made 2 promises I intended to keep. Wait 4 hours and tell the world the legend of Cruz. So I sat, lips clamped tightly together, holding it in, watching the clock, trying not to think at all. I was so bloody thirsty. Hungry. Try keeping your lips pressed together for 4 hours. It's damn near impossible. I sat motionless, breathing slow and even, afraid I might burp or sneeze. Holding my mouth closed with my hand, swallowing yawns, making funny noises in the back of my throat when I needed to cough. Thinking of Barons, of my sister. I'd lost them both once, and gotten them both back. I'd never been happier, because I'd drunk deep of grief, and it had made my joy all the sweeter. I was going to kill my sister again, and quite possibly Barons, and probably Christian. There was no easy path. If I didn't sing it, everything that existed would eventually be destroyed. But to sing it, I had to kill people I loved. I didn't trust myself to see Barons. I knew if he came to sit with me and we tried to spend these final hours together, I'd fail to keep my mouth shut. And the moment I opened it, he might die. Yep, not in a hurry to go there. But Alina I could handle, and I needed to see her. She would definitely die, and I needed to have one last chance to say goodbye. I couldn't talk, but I could text. Alina, I'm at BB&B. Please come. My screen flashed instantly. What's wrong? Nothing. Promise. Just come. She was there in 10 minutes. We sat on the couch and I texted messages explaining what had happened, to which she replied aloud. And when the talking was done, my big sister smiled and hugged me and told me that she understood because, although she'd been confused at first, eventually her memories had cleared. She knew she'd died in that alley. She told me her last thoughts as she'd been dying. Her life hadn't flashed before her eyes like people said it did. She hadn't thought for 1 minute about anything she'd done or wanted to do, or about money or fame or success. The only thing she'd thought about at the end of her life was love. Whether she'd said it enough, shown it enough, felt it enough. And when the dying had gotten really bad, she'd escaped into memories of the vast store of love she'd known, and the pain had vanished, and she had no longer been afraid. She said that was what life was all about. And if you were wise, you figured it out long before you died. I'd given her more time, a chance to say goodbye to the world she'd known, and she was grateful. And she was proud of me. I punched her lightly then, and made her stop talking because I was going to start crying, and the song would come out. We sat together, shoulder to shoulder on the couch, and played each other our favorite songs for the next 20 minutes. Until I only had 15 minutes to go to keep my promise. Then, heart heavy with grief, I texted Barons and Ryden and told them to get Dancer, hoping the song might heal his heart and meet me at the black hole outside Chester's ASAP. Don't text Mom and Dad, Alina said. I can't let them watch whatever's going to happen. Just tell them I love them, and I said, thanks for everything. They really are the best. I swallowed tightly and nodded. Arm in arm, we stepped out into the late afternoon. 59. Run, you little bitch. I want your power glowing, juicy, flowing, red hot. Shisadu. Once again the universe favors me. I possess a fey vessel, and all fey can sense their queen. As I burst from the brick wall behind Baron's books and bubbles, I know exactly where it is. I can feel it moving through the streets of Dublin. The air is thick with the stench of death and decay. In my absence, the black holes have grown, and their cancerous enormity excites me, but also goads me to expediency. I have scant time to seize my horse, whisk it to ferry, and become fully immortal before the planet devours itself. Then I will ride the bitch that dared leave me to another world and spend the rest of eternity torturing it for its many sins. Aroused by the thought of reducing it to begging me over and over to kill it, Never let you go, Michaela. Love you always. I focus on it and command the unboxed but very broken princess to sift us there. 60. Sing me a song of a lass that is gone. Mac. When we arrived at Chester's, Barons Ryde and Danny, Dancer, and Christian were waiting for us, a safe distance from the black hole. The moment I looked at Barons, I knew he knew everything. Had known ever since it happened. My damned brand. I wanted one of my own on him, assuming Keith survived.
If you think you can handle it.
His glittering eyes said. He'd felt me kissing Cruz, without knowing why. I marveled at his restraint, his patience. There was no accusation in his eyes, no insecurity or brooding jealousy. He trusted that I'd done what I'd done for good reason, and it didn't change a thing about his feelings for me. Still, there was an unmistakable territorial possessiveness in his dark, ancient gaze. And I knew once the world was safe, if he still remained, he would need to reclaim me, us, thoroughly. He knew, too, that I had the song, and hadn't contacted him immediately. I was honored by the absolute freedom the man granted me. I gestured to my mouth and nudged Alina, who told them, "She can't talk. If she opens her mouth, the song will come out. Cruz gave it to her, on the condition she didn't use it for 4 hours. We've got 2 minutes to go." It was a testament to what a bizarre bunch of people we were that no one even asked any questions. They all just nodded and waited, resolute soldiers for whatever happened next. I absorbed our small group, looking from cherished face to face. Alina. She met my gaze levelly and smiled faintly. "Good to go, little Mac." Clenching my jaw so I wouldn't blurt a reply or burst into tears, I turned my gaze to Danny and Dancer, who were standing off to the side holding hands, and although Dancer looked tired, his eyes were brilliant with excitement. Danny's face was marble, chiseled and hard as stone, her gaze cold. But I knew my girl well, and when she felt the most, at this moment, hoping with every cell in her body the song would work miracles on his heart, was when she tried the hardest to hide it. She stole a quick glance at Ryden, and the hand that wasn't holding Dancer's fisted, and her face solidified even more. For a moment her eyes flickered, and emotion nearly broke through, but she got control of herself again. Ryden stood as far from the pair as he could while still being in the group, near enough to the black hole that his shirt was fluttering in the wind, his stance rigid. I thought of the brand Danny wore, and suspected last night had been difficult for him. I wondered just how much he'd felt of her passion, her pleasure and love for Dancer. Ryden glanced at Danny, and his gaze went from her face to their joined hands. He smiled faintly, but it didn't reach his eyes. They remained ancient, cold, eminently self-contained. He whipped that silvery gaze to me then and spoke inside my mind.
"If I don't make it, help her rescue Shazam. ASAP. And that means as soon as the fuck possible, nothing else has priority. Swear it."
I nodded.
"Take care of her."
"Always."
"And tell her not to vibrate on the kid. His heart can't handle it. It generates a subtle electrical charge."
I blinked. Well, I had my answer. The brand broadcast pretty much everything. I nodded again, and he looked swiftly away. "Christian." I met his gaze, and he smiled faintly, and shrugged as if to say,
"I never thought it was going to get better anyway."
Then he threw back his dark head and laughed. Danny shot him a look. "Dude," she said admiringly. How Christian had changed. How we'd all changed, keeping the best parts, letting the worst drop away. I looked at Barons. It was entirely possible in a very short time only Danny, Dancer, and I would still be standing here. Barons glided toward me in that eerie, fluid fashion, stopped and laced our hands together. We would hold on to each other, until the last. Sun, moon, and stars, I told him. He inclined his head.
Of all the years, this one with you has been my finest. Fire to my ice, Mac.
Frost to my flame, Jericho. Forever, we said, and it was a vow far more powerful and binding than any ring or piece of paper. There was nothing more to say. If we hadn't said it already, we'd fucked up, and no reparations could be made at this late hour. But his eyes said he was proud of the woman I'd become, and my eyes said that I was proud he was my man. And we smiled at each other, and he said something I never thought I'd hear Jericho Baron say. He said, "Fuck," Alina exploded. "Mac, the Shisadu is here." For a moment, I simply couldn't process what Alina had said. We'd left the Shisadu trapped in the boudoir. It could only be here if A, it had broken free of the stones, B, found a body to carry it, and C, escaped mere minutes after we'd left. I couldn't feel it at all. My she-seer senses were completely muted by the presence of the song inside me. I spun wildly, trying to locate it, then shot a frantic look at Alina and she pointed behind me. I whirled to find myself 10 paces from the unseelie princess we'd left cocooned in the boudoir. Her mouth stretched impossibly wide, reminding me of Derek O'Banion when he'd been possessed by the first book, revealing rows and rows of whirling sharp metal teeth. For a moment I thought she was going to eat me, bite off my head and swallow it. But she convulsed as if retching, then abruptly a dark storm exploded from her jaws. It darted straight for me. I couldn't sift. I had little true magic, but I had the song and I needed to sing it, now, to destroy the Shisadu once and for all. I opened my mouth, but the inky cloud the unseelie princess had retched narrowed to a thin funnel of toxic dust and shot straight for it. I clamped my teeth shut again so hard it hurt my entire skull. Then, Barons was lunging, trying to intercept the dark storm in his own impossibly wide jaws, transforming into the beast as he moved. The cloud retracted into the unseelie princess, and as I watched, stunned, Barons twisted in mid-air, slapped a crimson rune on her I'd not even known he'd been carrying and had no idea where he'd gotten it from, then grabbed her by the shoulders and ground his mouth to hers in a savage kiss. He sucked the Shisadu right out of the princess's body in one long lip-locked inhale. The unseelie princess collapsed, dead to the ground, and all I could think was, Barons could kill with a kiss? I thought I'd known what he was. I narrowed my eyes. I'd kissed that lethal mouth many times. He whirled and bore down on me, eyes obsidian, full black, no crimson sparks, nothing left of my Jericho at all, and he roared,
"Fucking sing, Mac. I can't hold it long."
The shadow exploded out of his mouth as he spoke. He shuddered violently and clawed at the air and forcibly sucked the Shisadu back in. I shot Alina a frantic goodbye, locked eyes with Barons, and I opened my mouth and released the Song of Macon. I'll never be able to put into words what it is. Frequency that elevates to a level of being we don't yet understand, while rendering insignificant the many daily burdens we think we carry. The song was made in heaven, if such a place exists, by angels, spun of the divine. For a time I was nowhere and everywhere listening to, no, being, music of such exquisite perfection that I was whole and right. And I knew absolutely everything and understood it all. Each detail of existence was revealed, without enigma or confusion. I apprehended myself, the world, others with exquisite clarity. Our entire existence was fluid and living, and as a race, a planet, a universe, it was all connected, and we were all part of one another. And when we hurt one another, we hurt ourselves. And when we warred, we hurt the universe, and that was ourselves. And we were so stupid sometimes, I couldn't believe the song even hung around and let us use it. As humans, so much is mysterious to us. As the woman that sang the ancient melody, everything was clear, and it all fit. The universe was precisely as it was meant to be. No fate, checks and balances. The universe listed toward life and beauty, always had, always would. We were the universe. Each and every one of us, light or dark, right or wrong. We were tiny, essential cogs in the grand and mighty wheel. Somehow, even the Shisa do. As the song poured out of me, I began to glow and turn translucent, and I thought, well, shit, maybe I'm going to die after all. But I didn't care, because I'd done what was needed. I'd been the cog it was most desirable for me to be. A brilliant blaze of light exploded from my body, and the air was filled with countless, tiny, fluid arrows of light. Events unfolded in slow motion to me then, though later they would tell me it all happened in a split second. I suspect I was somehow out of time by that point, insubstantial, changed by the melody flowing through me. A thousand of the golden dazzling things darted into the black hole, which began to shiver and shake, then shrink. The destructive black sphere grew smaller and smaller until, with an audible pop, it imploded and was simply gone, leaving nothing but the deep trench dug beneath it and ropes cordoning off normal, healthy reality. Countless more arrows exploded forth, darting out into the world, like the Enterprise entering warp speed seeking out the rest of the black holes. We'd done it. The song of Macon was free and healing our world. I turned to watch each of my companions, pierced in turn with arrows shot by me. Mea culpa, please let them live, I begged whatever god had created the melody. The brilliant lances of light passed straight through Danny and Dancer, and right in two, coming out on the other side. Then one vanished inside Christian, but didn't pass through. He began to shudder and snarl, and just when I thought we were definitely losing him, it abruptly shot out and moved on. Christian shook his head hard, looking dazed. Barons took a dozen of those arrows into his half-man, half-beast body, and every one stayed inside. His face contorted with agony, and his eyes locked with mine. I stared into his dark face, anguished, wanting desperately to stop singing, but I never would. I knew my role. I accepted it. Jerking violently, he doubled over and vomited the dark storm of the Shisa do from his body. It gushed out of him, a black, viscous, oily river oozing onto the pavement. And the damned thing actually shaped itself into the words, "Fuck you, Michaela, you will die, 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 die." If my mouth hadn't been busy singing, I would have snorted. Pompous superiority complex to the end. Hundreds of glowing arrows twisted and turned midair, knifed into the inky stain of the Shisa do like evil-seeking missiles. The words collapsed, and the blackness shuddered and rippled, then surged into the air where it whipped around and twisted violently. Then it was gone. Arrows erupted from Barons's body. On the ground, on all fours, he threw his head back and looked up at me.
"I'm still here, Rainbow Girl,"
he said fiercely inside my head. My heart soared. He hadn't died. I hadn't killed him. I looked at Alina and my heart sank. 100 golden arrows pierced her everywhere and did not come out again. "Love you, Junior." My sister was gone. Part 4. Courage above all is the first quality of a warrior. Sun Tzu. 61. I'm on top of the world. A. Danny. We had a blowout beginning of the world party that night. Best party ever. It was like something I saw on TV. There hasn't been time or opportunity in my life for parties. You know, the kind where everyone's just in a really good mood, and nobody has a private, nefarious agenda, and there's music, and all the food you could possibly want, and the night seems to go on forever, And people played cards and liar's dice and laughed their asses off and do shots. And you're with a man who thinks you're beautiful and hot and can't take his eyes off you and loves you. Yeah, that kind of night. Golden. We hung out at BB&B, and even though Mac had lost Alina again, she had some kind of serenity about it that Jack and Rainy Lane shared. I think at the end of the day, they'd grieved her death once, and they just felt immensely grateful for the extra time they'd gotten with her. That, and the world had been saved. It was impossible to not feel ebullient. We'd come so close to losing it all, and hadn't. We'd gotten reports in from every country that had been contaminated by the destructive spheres. The black holes were gone, and our planet was healed. The Shisa Du had been destroyed. For good, this time. The Unseelie had all been unmade. Mac said she could feel a complete void where the Dark Court had once existed. The Seelie were alive and well, and she said they'd already begun clamoring for her immediate appearance at court. I was curious how that was going to go. Mac was the Fae Queen, for good now. Strange. We'd sent word through to each of the new worlds, and in short order folks would be returning to Earth, although I suspected some of the more adventurous types would opt to stay and colonize. It's a great big universe out there now, and everything has changed. As far as Dancer could tell, the song didn't heal his heart. He said he felt the same. And if he was disappointed, in true Dancer fashion, he didn't show it. I was crestfallen, but refused to brood. Things were no better, but they were no worse either. And each day, I learned new ways to deal with our situation. He'd been having problems for 11 years. I could easily get 11 more. And who knew what tomorrow might bring, or what miraculous cure Shazam might have to offer? Or maybe there was something Mac, with her fae power, or Dancer himself with his huge brain could figure out to do in time. The possibilities were limitless. Apparently the song hadn't considered Christian or Sean O'Banion made of imperfect song, as I'd suspected. Christian was still an Unseelie prince.
"I don't bloody fucking get it,"
he said to me for the third time, tossing back a swallow of scotch.
"I'm Unseelie. It should have either killed me or stripped the Unseelie out of me, leaving me a normal man,"
he said irritably. It may not have changed him, but something about him was different. Possibly just that he was getting more comfortable being what he was. Dancer said,
"The song only destroyed what was created from imperfect song. You weren't. You were born a human. My bloody wings were created from imperfect song." "No, they weren't,"
Dancer said.
"You're a man who acquired fae parts, but your essence is human. I seriously doubt the song makes mistakes. It decided you weren't imperfect. For fuck's sake, did you want to die?"
"No, I just wanted to be myself again."
"I think the point is, you are. You heard the music. It sent its arrows into you, and it left you alone. That means what you've become can't be that bad. Maybe you should try to..."
"Don't bloody tell me I should try to bloody embrace what I've become. That bastard Cruz told me often enough."
"That bastard Cruz," Mac said, passing by with a drink in her hand, "saved us and our planet, and he didn't have to. Nothing's black and white, Christian. If I were you, I'd start playing with my power, figuring out what I could do with it. At least you're not Queen of the Fae. If anyone gets to bitch about the position they got stuck with, it's me, and I'm not. So buck up, little buckaroo. I'm Queen of the Fairies. Your death. Life goes on." Then she was off to join Barons and Riordan, who were playing poker with the Lanes and Inspector Jane.
"Yeah, well, she's not the one that can't have sex,"
Christian muttered darkly.
"They're bloody having sex constantly."
"I told you I'm perfectly happy to help with that," Enyo said, dropping over the back of the couch next to him. Christian shot up and stalked away. I arched a brow at Enyo, who shrugged. War's over. I need a new challenge. Then she was off the couch too, stalking after him. Then Dancer and I were slow dancing while everyone carried on around us, as if we were the only two people in the world. Then the music was fast and fun, and some of the she-seers who hadn't gone off-world showed up, and we filled the bookstore with dancing and laughter, and even Mac and Barons joined in when Tub Thumpin' came on. Hours later, Dancer finally said,
"Want to get out of here, Mega?"
His eyes were tired, but brilliant as ever, the color of tropical surf. Did I ever? I wanted this night to go on forever, but I also wanted it to end. "Yes, tomorrow we get to..."
"Rescue Shazam!"
Dancer exclaimed, eyes sparkling.
"Bloody hell! I can't wait to meet him!"
I kissed him, and kissed him. Then I had him leaning back against a bookcase. I was his second skin, and we got lost in a long, dreamy kiss that told me exactly how the night was going to go. I looked for Riordan to say goodbye before we left, but he was nowhere to be found.
"Freeze-frame me, Danny,"
Dancer said eagerly, as we stepped outside, and I couldn't resist. We were on top of the world, young and in perfect sync with each other's hearts. He loved being in the slipstream, said it helped blow his mind open to new ideas. As I kicked us up into that other dimension, and the starry tunnel unfolded around us, he kissed me, which totally broke my concentration, and we stumbled down, cartwheeling along the alley, laughing. Then he had me turned around against the brick wall, and my jeans were down, and so were his, and my sword was shoved aside, and he was kissing the back of my neck and pushing inside me from behind, and I knew later tomorrow I'd gouge D&D into the wall in this very spot, and I laughed, thinking that if I did it everywhere we had sex, the whole city would be graffitied with D's in no time.
"I love you, Danny Mega O'Malley,"
Dancer said against my ear as he moved inside me.
"More than the world is big, deeper than the sky is blue, truer than the universe is vast, I love you more eternal than pie."
A fierce elation exploded in my heart, and I gasped, "I love you the same way, Dancer." Then the only sounds in the street were the ones a man and woman make when they live out loud and in every color of the rainbow. I woke up a little after noon the next day to sun slanting across our bed and lay curled on my side, wondering if Queen Mac had anything to do with the sultry climb drifting in the open window. I trusted she knew she couldn't turn Dublin permanently into southern Georgia without seriously screwing up our rainy, verdant isle, but I'd happily take a few days of this weather, knowing how much Dancer loved it. He needed some long, lazy hours in the sunshine to recuperate from the pace of recent events. "It's the day, Shazam," I whispered, glowing inside. That one, the one I'd been waiting for forever. Today, Riordan and Barons were going to start stacking silvers to rescue my beloved friend. And life would be perfect. Me, Shazam, and Dancer. What more could I ask? My heart was so full of happiness, it felt like it might explode. We'd had sex 3 times last night. I'd bowed out, the fourth, pretending I was sore, like that could even happen, achingly aware of how exhausted he'd been. "We have all the time in the world," I'd told him, hoping it was true. Pacing ourselves was the key to getting a long life with him. Going to sleep next to him every night, waking up with him every morning, feeling the warmth of his body next to... I went still. So still, I might have been made of stone. Warily, I opened all my senses to their fullest. I sleep on my side, one arm under the pillow, backside pressed up to him. Dancer sleeps flat on his back, arms usually over his head. He breathes easier that way. He was behind me, his hand grazing my hip. His... cool hand. I pondered that. He might have gotten up to get a glass of milk or something, and his hand was still cool from holding the glass. Or maybe he'd had one of the great popsicles we'd made a couple nights ago from grape juice, and a couple of bottles of iced wine we'd found. I'd roll over and find his lips were purple from sucking on one. Everything would be fine. "Dancer," I whispered. Nothing. "Dancer," I said. Silence. Loudly, brightly. "Dancer, wake up! It's the day! We're going through to Shazam today. You two are going to love each other. We're going to be a family. And we were doing it together. He was coming off world to Planet X with me. We'd decided last night. Even though I was worried about his heart, I'd agreed to not cage him, and he wanted to be there with me to celebrate a joyful reunion. Or comfort me, if it didn't go, as we hoped. I have super senses. Super smell, sight, strength, speed, and hearing. There was only one person breathing in our bed. I exploded up, spun mid-air, and slammed my hands down on his chest. Dancer, I snarled, wake up! He was still. Eyes closed. Pump, pump, pump. I read about this. Never did it. Learned in case I needed to. 30 pumps at the rate of 100 to 120 per minute. Tilt head, lift chin, pinch nose, breathe. 2 breaths, each lasting a second. Pump, pump, pump. Breathe. I kicked up into the slipstream so I could do it faster and straddled him, envisioning the heart inside his body, that lovely, unfairly penalized muscle, and pretended I was wrapping my hands around it, massaging it back to life as I worked. Pump, 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 breathe. I vibrated as intensely as I could, because Mac told me that Riordan said, and how he knows is beyond me, that I give off a subtle electrical charge when I do. I hit full intensity, pumping at the same time. No breath. Not a twitch, or even a flicker of eyes behind his lids. Pump, 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 breathe. Pump, 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 breathe. The tears came long before I stopped trying to bludgeon and breathe and vibrate his body back to life. Burning, hurting, scarring so motherfucking deep. My head whipped back and I snarled at the ceiling with grief and fury and white, hot rage. Why? I shook my fist. Give me one good reason. Tell me why, you son of a bitch. Why not me? Do you take everyone away and leave me here just to torture me? I don't know how long I wept and raged up at the ceiling, but when I changed tactics and began begging, offering anything, everything, all my superpowers, whatever made me special, just let me have Dancer back one more day, one more hour, even just long enough to get to say goodbye. Hands dropping uselessly at my sides, brain going numb. Reject, reject, reject. His body temperature told the story well enough. He'd slipped away shortly after I'd fallen asleep. Hours ago, while I'd slumbered ignorantly on. Dancer had died alone, and I'd been lying beside him, having happy dreams, oblivious to his suffering, his need. This had been my fear. I wouldn't be there when he died. Worse yet, I'd been right there. Yet not. I'd wanted to be holding his hand. I'd wanted him to not be alone. But no, I'd slept through it. Had it hurt? Had it taken a long time? Did he gasp at my name? Or had his enormous, beautiful heart just slowed and slowed until he drifted off in a dream? Had he been afraid? Had he suffered? Had he even known? I sat on top of him, staring down at him, and sought the answers in his face. It was peaceful. His eyes were closed. No sign of strain in his face. Accepting. Just like he'd always been, of everything, of me, of his unfair fucking life. Always seeing the good in me, in everyone around him. Hot tears dropped down my cheeks, scalding my skin. Wake up! Wake up! Wake up! I cried, nudging him. Please don't leave me! Oh God, Dancer! Don't go! Not yet! We're supposed to have more time! His face was pale and cool, his hair tousled by our lovemaking, lips parted as if on a final sigh. I love you more eternal than pie, he'd said. I drew back my fist and punched him in the chest, thinking if my punch was lethal enough to stop a heart, maybe it could start one. That was when I felt him. Not beneath me, behind me, where no sun was touching my skin. I felt sunshine on my shoulders. I felt his presence. I swear, I felt his hands moving my hair aside so he could kiss the back of my neck. Then they rested solid and warm on my shoulders and squeezed a little. And until the day I die myself, I'll continue to believe that I actually heard him speak.
No tears, Mega. Only joy. We were the lucky ones.
The lucky ones? He was dead and could say that? Was he batshit crazy? Maybe he was the lucky one, but I wasn't. I was here. I was alone. And his body was empty of all that was Dancer, and I was in bed with a corpse.
Love doesn't die just because the person does. Everything we felt for each other still exists, Danny. It's in your heart. Don't turn it off, Wild One. Never turn it off again. The world needs you, and you need the world.
Then the warmth was gone, and I stretched out beside him, and I held on to him and kissed him and kissed him and said all those things we'd only just started saying to each other. I don't know how long I lay there. Time got weird then. I only know, at some point, I became dimly aware that Riordan was in the room with us, touching my shoulder, watching me with intensely bright eyes, untangling me from him, wrapping a blanket around me, making me get out of bed. And I screamed and screamed at him, and I hit him, and told him to leave me alone because I was never letting go of Dancer. And he let me do it, rage and scream and hit him over and over. And when I finally collapsed to the floor where I lay sobbing and broken, he picked me up, tucked a blanket around me again, and carried me out into the much too bright day. I got lost in a really bad place then, where I felt sorry for myself and angry at the world, and I was made of nothing but pain, and I felt ancient and arthritic in every single one of my 222 bones. And the pain was so huge, and I knew I couldn't survive it. It was going to kill me. And that was okay, because Dancer was probably really close still, and we could grab each other's hands and freeze frame to the next adventure together. Then Raiden's fingers were brushing my forehead, and he was laying me down in a crisp white bed, murmuring soft words. And I think I kind of died then. Because the pain, finally, blissfully, stopped. I have foggy memories for a time. I know Matt came and sat with me, wherever I was, somewhere deep in Chester's. Barons even came sometimes. And once he held my hand, and I remember thinking I must have been dreaming, because Barons would never hold my hand. But I still remember the feel of his hand, how strong and big it was, and how it felt like he was sending some of his gargantuan strength into my body, taking some of my pain out of it. I have distant grey memories of Kat, Enyo, and Christian lurking behind the veil I couldn't see past, or didn't want to. Even Jack and Rainey sat in my room, keeping watch, with Mrs. Lane fretting non-stop, tucking my blankets close, feeling my forehead, sometimes just sitting on the bed, touching me somewhere. I have clearer memories of Riordan. Each time I awoke, if one of the others wasn't in the room, he was. Always. Sitting, chair by my bed, watching, waiting, forcing me to live. Sometimes stroking my forehead and making all the hurt go away for a time. Other times punishing me by forcing me to live. I'd wake up, but refuse to open my eyes. He'd know anyway and threaten to hook up a feeding tube if I didn't eat. He'd lift me up and lean us both back against the headboard and pour protein drinks down my throat until I gagged. There was no way in hell I was chewing. Chewing was a commitment to getting out of bed, and that was a commitment to living. And I'd roll over again and melt back into the grey place. Of all the things that happened to me in my life, there are only two that nearly crippled me. Losing Shazam, and loosened Dancer. I thought about that in my grey place, and eventually realized it was because I'd chosen to love them, to give them my whole heart. And losing someone that you'd willingly given all of yourself to hurts far more than the many indignities and cruelties of the world. It's pure. It's a gift that gives back tenfold, and once you've lost it, you can never have it again. In the end, it was both of them that brought me back. In my grey place, I dreamed that Dancer was yelling at me through a pane of glass, and he was saying Shazam's name over and over. And he told me that just because we didn't get to hang together anymore didn't mean I could be a complete jackass, or that Shazam didn't need me. So I needed to pull my shit together and take on the world again. Like superheroes do.
He loves you like pie too,
he said.
Eternally. Wake up. Seize the day. He needs you now. There will always be someone who needs you. And you'll always answer the call. That's your place in the great slipstream, Danny. And you've always known it.
It was a lovely service, Mac said as we walked through the cemetery. We'd had a big memorial mass at the Abbey and buried Dancer and Alina next to Joe in the private graveyard behind the fortress. I still couldn't believe Joe was gone. It seemed like just yesterday I'd seen her at Chester's, but thanks to some unseelie prick, I never would again. I nodded. I still wasn't big on talking. It seemed like too much effort. But I was getting stronger every day, and finally gaining some weight back. I like the inscription on Dancer's headstone, Mac said when we stooped to place flowers on the stones of three side-by-side graves. Alina McKenna Lane, Joanna McLaughlin, Dancer Elias Garrick. I'd chosen it myself. Never the sidekick. Always the hero. I'll see you in the slipstream. I swallowed hard. He knew I loved him. I'd said it before he died and showed him in a thousand ways. I didn't see much point in getting maudlin with his epitaph. If he was hanging around somewhere, I highly doubted he was checking out his headstone and reading the inscription. He'd be hanging out in the bathroom when I was naked in the shower. I miss him. I had two holes where my heart used to be. The temptation to become Jada again was intense, but I lacked the energy to pull it off. It took effort to stay ice cold all the time when you'd pretty much been slapped together at birth from passion, fire, and a teaspoon of stardust. Mac put her arms around me and pulled me into a hug. I know, honey, she said. We all do. He was one of a kind. After a time, she said, Are you ready to do this? I didn't move. I wasn't sure I was up to it. While I'd grieved, Riordan and Barons had gone through to Planet X and stacked silvers so I could go get Shazam and bring him home. The problem was, Shazam was nowhere to be found. There'd been nothing on the small island but the enormous mirror. No force field cage. No half-naked tribesmen wearing feathered headdresses. Not there and not anywhere else on the small world. It was deserted, void of both humanoid and Shazamoid life forms. Yes, they'd called for him. Mac told me Riordan had stood on the island calling for Shazam for the better part of a day. With no response. I suspected they still weren't completely convinced Shazam wasn't a figment of my imagination. And if I didn't find him, they might never be convinced. Might think me even more of a nut job than I currently was. It was possible after decades, Shazam was still waiting for me, somewhere up in the air, refusing to come down for anyone but me. But it was just as possible that he'd died, or left that world long ago. Either way, I needed to know. Facing the truth is always better than living in limbo. And as I'd recently learned, there were a lot of people far more nosily concerned about my well-being than I'd ever realized. People willing to take time out of their own lives to make sure I was okay. I couldn't say I was comfortable with all the fuss, but it wasn't the worst thing either. Yes, Let's do this, Mac. I took her hand and, as we walked from the cemetery, I didn't glance back at his grave. Dancer wasn't there. I know a funny thing about eyes. Where you let them look is where they take you. Look back, and you stay stuck in a lost, forever unattainable past. Look forward, and you live. 62. For a moment, you were wild with abandon, like a child. Danny. When I arrived at Kilmainham Jail, people were having another party or something. There were a few hundred people milling around the portal to Planet X. I glanced around, trying to fathom what was going on. Surely they hadn't all come out to see me off. Jack and Rainey came rushing over the minute I got there. Rainey smothered me in a big mom hug and petted my hair and generally fussed over me so thoroughly I just stood there looking at her, because none of the things I felt like doing or saying were socially appropriate. "I'm so glad to see you up and about, Danny," she exclaimed, pressing a kiss to my cheek. "We were so worried." I shot a look at Mac and she gave me one back, and damned if I didn't hear her voice in my head. I didn't tell them and never will, but I suspect Alina did. Nobody blames you, and everyone loves you. Deal. What the hell? Was everyone going to get the power of telepathy but me? I scowled at her and ignored her for a while. Then Enyo, Cat, and a cluster of she-seers were milling around me, all talking at once, and it was overwhelming to my mega ears, but I moved into the cluster, greeting each in turn, assessing Cat, startled to realize how different she was. Enyo on my right, Cat on my left. It felt right. Us as a team. And as I searched their faces, I knew they were feeling it too. Mac didn't know how to sing the walls back up between our worlds. It might take her a long time to figure it out. She-seers were critical. The three of us would find our places among them and help the others find theirs. Christian joined me briefly, iridescent eyes glittering. Told me he'd be keeping an eye on me, so if I saw him sometimes hanging around, not to worry. He'd be nearby if I ever needed help. Riordan, Castillo, Fade, and Barons were standing apart near the portal. I spotted Lore in the crowd, but he seemed to be keeping a distance from me and Mac. But once she'd moved off to talk with her parents, he moved in, grinning down at me. And for the first time since Dancer died, I felt my face relax and shape a smile. It's impossible not to smile at Lore when he grins at you. But there was something different about him. For the first time since I'd met him, he looked somehow ancient, like the rest of the Nine, in a way he never had before.
You ready, honey?
I nodded.
I'd go through with you, but me and Mac, we got a bit of a problem we're working out.
I narrowed my eyes. What kind of problem?
Bitch killed me 'cause she got pissed at me. I'd kill her back, but then Barons would kill me, and I'd have to kill him, and we'd all kill each other for a few centuries, like we did once before, and I ain't gonna go back to that shitty, boring time.
I arched a brow, waiting, but he said nothing more. I couldn't wait to get the scoop from Mac. If she'd killed him, she'd had a good reason. Sorry about Joe, I said.
Yeah,
he said. When I finally managed to disengage myself from everyone who wanted to say hi to me for some bizarre reason, I joined Riordan, Barons, and Mac at the portal. You shouldn't come with me. You may not come out if you're there. Three immutable gazes stared at me, and I was struck by the sudden realization that I might never get rid of these people. They were in my life to stay, and they were going with me now, and that was that. I shrugged. I'd find a way to make them leave if push came to shove. Okay, then. Let's do this. A hush fell over the crowd as we moved toward the wall. A dozen feet away from the undetectable portal, a tall, wide silver had been embedded in the wall. We're working to establish similar connections to many worlds. We've gone universal, not global, Mac told me. Bloody hell. How our world had changed. I inhaled deep, exhaled slow, preparing myself for the worst, hoping fervently for the best. Planet X. I was going through. It was the day. I'd never have believed I'd be leaving a world that had no dancer in it. It was still impossible for me to wrap my brain around. Mac said it would be that way for quite a while, that I'd expect to see him around the next corner, or I'd text him or pick up the phone to call and his absence would hit me like a 2-ton truck. I knew it would be a long time before I could ever go near Trinity College again. There were places in our city I'd be avoiding permanently. Still, I'd been loved, incredibly loved. And that was something I'd never had before. It had changed me, given me new parts. Thank you, Dancer, I whispered, as I stepped through the portal. The small island was as empty as Mac had said it was, with the exception of a new, much smaller mirror that was now suspended in the air next to the enormous one. I turned in a slow circle as Mac, Barons, and Riordan stepped through behind me. The planet that shorted out my powers made me feel sick to my stomach. Bile rose, and I swallowed hard. I was here for Shazam. Nothing would interfere with my mission. I didn't look at Riordan. He'd seen me a total mess far too many times lately. I'd been ignoring him and planned to continue doing so for a while. There, on the grassy island with waves lapping gently at the shore, was my trash can, battered and rusted. My promise to Shazam spray-painted on the side. The food I'd tossed through was gone, no doubt pecked clean by birds on the world. The enormous dog bed I'd tossed through was... I hurried over to it and knelt on the ground, inspecting it. I plucked a long, thick silver whisker from the dark brown faux fur and held it up for the others to see. He was here! I exclaimed excitedly. My excitement evaporated. It was only proof that he'd been here a few months ago when I'd tossed it in, which, Shazam's time, was decades ago. I surged to my feet, turned my face up to the sun and called, I see you, Yee-Yee. I'm here, Shazam. I'm sorry it took me so long, but I promise I'll never leave you again. There was no reply. I spun in a slow circle, thinking maybe he didn't like seeing three strangers, and frankly, they were three of the strangest people I'd ever known. Two ancient immortal shapeshifters, one Fae Queen. Maybe the Nine smelled bad to him. I could understand his reservations. I was downright normal compared to them. They're my friends, Shazam. They won't hurt you. It's safe to come out. Still nothing. I called for him. I said his name over and over. I crooned and cajoled and finally burst into our theme song. Shaz the mighty fur beast lived up in the air. When I glanced at Riordan, his shoulders were shaking and he was doing his best not to laugh. I was a teenager, I said with a scowl. It's a great song. The meter works, it rhymes, and the melody is indisputably catchy.
I'll take it over Animaniacs,
he said, quickly turning away to stare out over the lake. His shoulders were still shaking. Bastard was still laughing. I whirled away and resumed singing. I spent hours calling him, talking, bribing, flattering, trying everything. I brought raw fish in my backpack and offered them to the air, waving them around, making a complete ass of myself, and inciting a fresh wave of nausea. If he was up there, forcing me to enact such dramatic shenanigans, there was going to be hell to pay. Finally, I turned to the others and said, You have to go back home. He may never come out with you on the island. I refused to believe he wasn't here. It might take weeks, maybe even months, to convince me of that. None of them liked the idea.
I'm not leaving you alone here,
Riordan said.
I'll make myself unseen.
Shazam won't be fooled, I replied irritably. He's far more